Kia ora and welcome to Airman's Podcast, episode 249. Today is Friday, March 4th, 2011. It's now been 10 days since the Christchurch earthquake, and there are some updates about that, not all of them pleasant. And I have some other developments going on in our lives, which I'll talk about at the end, and I'm resuming comments and so on today. But first, the Christchurch earthquake. It has been 10 days. This week on Tuesday, the first week, I was going to say anniversary, but that means year, you know what I mean. First week since, we had 2 minutes of silence across the country. And I was home and I watched it, or I should say I had the TV on TVNZ's midday news and on TV One. And it really was quite moving to see people all around the country stopping and being silent for 2 minutes. They had live cutaways of the silence, which is kind of weird on TV to see just pictures, no sound. But anyway, no, it was really quite good and very moving. And but so far, I'll give you the updates, there are now 163 people confirmed dead. And that's expected to rise to approximately 200 when they're all done. At the moment, they're still going through rubble in various places, including the rubble of the Christchurch Cathedral, where they think there might be about 20 people who were trapped in the building when it collapsed. Well, the tower in particular, because there was an observation thing up in the bell tower. Roughly 90% of Christchurch now has power. About 79% have water. Fewer people have sewage. The sewers are a whole other issue, and they're trying to sort that out. They have surveyed roughly 1,000-ish heritage buildings in Christchurch, and so far 500 of them will have to be torn down. So that's 500 of the historic buildings in Christchurch will no longer exist when this is all done. They've hauled away something like 220,000 tons of silt. Of course, tons are metric tons, as we call them in America, which is 10,000 kilograms, I think it is. Anyway, you can look it up. I just think of it as a ton. Anyway, it's a hell of a lot, is what it is. And they were on the news. They were showing the landfills where they're going. These huge mountains of the stuff, and a lot of that is, you know, stuff that's just been oozed up from the ground in the liquefaction part. So it's just astounding. But there's been a lot of stuff that's been going on. Not all of it pleasant. And one of the things I've always tried to do in the podcast is to be honest and to share things that are, you know, that are real. Whether they're pleasant or not is kind of beside the point, really. And so that's what I'm going to do now. There has been a controversy in Christchurch over the way the eastern suburbs of Christchurch have been treated. And when I say a controversy, first of all, suburbs. In New Zealand, suburb is a part of a city. It's not a separate town outside of a city as it is in the U.S. In Chicago terms, we would have called it a neighborhood. I don't know what it would be called in other parts of the country, but it's part of Christchurch City. And the eastern part is where a lot of the poorer areas are, among other things. And the allegation is that the eastern suburbs have been overlooked in the rescue efforts. And I'm trying to be careful in how I put this and diplomatic, because I don't know what the story is, if it's they just didn't think of it, they didn't do it, or what the story is. But the fact of the matter is, if you want to look at the places that don't have water, don't have power still 10 days later, they're in the eastern suburbs. And I honestly can't say why that is. But earlier this week, it was, let's see, 2 days ago, a email or angry blog post, I suppose it really was, started making the rounds in New Zealand. And it was from somebody who lives in Christchurch, and I'm sorry, I've forgotten his name offhand. I think it's Peter or something. At any rate, this is what he said. He said, and I'm going to read this directly, it's from somebody else's blog. I'll see if I can find the original and put a link to it, but if you really want it, email me. I'll see if I can find it, because it's not that easy. Anyway, he says, there are three cities in Christchurch right now, not one. Rescue City is inside the four main avenues and is cordoned off. That means almost all our knowledge of it comes from media, and man, is it a honeypot for them. It's given us understandably incessant tales and imageries of injury, tragedy, loss, broken iconic buildings, heroism, sacrifice, leadership, and gratifying international response. It's extremely television-friendly. My quake experience started there, but actually almost nobody lives in Rescue City. The resources and attention which are seemingly being poured into it right now are not addressing the most urgent post-quake needs of the population in Christchurch. Shower City. Is any part of Christchurch where you can take a hot shower, because you have electricity and running water and mostly working sewer lines? By latest estimate, that's about 65% of the city, much of it out west. In that part of Christchurch, weary and stressed people are getting on with life, though some may be wondering if they still have a job, and a few of them, with energy and time to spare, are wondering if they can do more to help the rest of the city. The media naturally lives in Shower City, and they talk almost exclusively to business leaders and the Rescue City leadership who also inhabit it. Refugee City is the rest of Christchurch, mainly in the eastern suburbs, though there are pockets elsewhere. It includes perhaps 50,000 to 100,000 people, though a more mobile chunk of them may have self-evacuated by now. Only half of those who remain in Refugee City have power, and almost none have running water. Many have been living on their own resources and their neighbors for over a week now. That means that batteries have run down, gas, if they had any to start with, has run out. Other supplies are low or gone. Roads are often very bad, and a lot of those from the poorer suburbs have no transport anyway. Their houses may or may not be intact. Their streets may be clear, broken, or full of silt or sewage. There are no showers, or ways to wash clothes, or to wash dishes, or to heat the must-boil water that is available, assuming that they can make it to the nearest water truck day after day. No refrigeration. No working toilets, and precious few port-a-loos. No face masks to defend against blown silt. They have no internet either, and usually no phones. And their radio batteries are dead or dying. The papers, if you can get one, are rapidly dated and usually far too general in their coverage. It really doesn't help someone without a car in Aranui to know that Fisher and Paykel are providing free laundries in Kaiapoi. All the above means the locals have few resources, little information, and no voice either. It's remarkably hard to call talkback radio on your local politician or emergency services when your landline is out and your cell phone battery is dead, or when it maybe has just enough charge to stay on hold for 5 minutes, but not 20, when calling the sole government helpline. Okay, so that's a very angry, obviously a very angry viewpoint from somebody who's from that part of the city, and that's really what started everything. I have to say, I first heard about it on Twitter, as I have so much else about this earthquake, and the news started spreading from there. It started being picked up, particularly by left-leaning blogs, but not exclusively. And the next day, Jerry Brownlee, who is the minister in charge of earthquake recovery, and he's now solely in charge of that, they took away his other portfolios temporarily, said that he didn't realize that the eastern suburbs hadn't received any of these services. And my first reaction is, isn't it his job to know? He's the minister in charge of the earthquake response and recovery. It's his job to know that. He should have known that the eastern suburbs hadn't received the same support as the other parts of the city. Well, he said that he would fix that. And within 24 hours, things started to change. They decided to send in far more port-a-loos than had been there before. They were working harder to restore power. They were putting in overhead lines, which is, by the way, one of the things that the state of emergency has allowed, because normally there'd be a lengthy process you'd have to go through to get approval to do that. But under state of emergency, they just push aside all the laws and do it. And because most of the power lines normally are undergrounded, but they're putting the overhead because it's faster. Anyway, so that started happening, and so the power is being restored faster now. And they, as I said, they are also bringing in port-a-loos, and they're trying to bring in more water. That's what I was trying to say. And they've also stepped up the patrols of police and the army in the area to try to stop looting, because apparently there's been quite a lot of that, especially after dark. And so these are some of the responses. And today, the prime minister was going to the eastern suburbs for his first visit, accompanied by the mayor, Bob Parker. And I believe it's his first trip to the eastern suburbs. He's been in the cordoned off area most of the time and occasionally gone a bit further afield, but I don't think he's been to the eastern suburbs yet until today. So all of this response started because of one angry rant that somebody posted on the internet, and it was picked up and repeated by lots of other people. So again, the power of the internet, the social networks, has played a role in this earthquake and the response to it. So don't ever underestimate the importance of the internet, because it is very important. Now, as I said, I don't have any reason to think that they deliberately ignored the eastern suburbs. Although some people think that I don't think anybody could be that cruel. And however, I am at a loss to explain why it has taken them nearly 10 days in order to do anything for the eastern suburbs. It's beyond me. But so that's the situation. And you may be interested to know that if you had the means to do so, you would not be able to hire your own portaloo, because they are considered essential services, or essential something or other, supplies or whatever. I've forgotten what the term is. And civil defense has to approve where the portaloos go. So, and there aren't any available. They were bringing in a bunch from, there's Sonny saying hi. They were bringing in a bunch from Australia. I think it was 4,000 of them they were bringing in, or something like that, 400, I can't remember. Why don't we pause, and I will let the dogs outside. Okay, I'm back. I have no idea what that was about. There's nobody here. There's nobody outside. I don't know. Sunny's a bit of a parker, and sometimes she gets the chorus going all by herself. But anyway, where was I? I've forgotten now. One of the things that the councils are doing is they're bringing in chemical toilets, which they're going to be distributing to people in the area, people without sewerage. And chemical toilets, they're basically like little teeny putties with chemicals inside them that deal with the stuff. And they're very often used on boats or for camping, that sort of thing. And I've forgotten how many they had on hand, but they didn't have enough. They ordered, as I understand it, if I heard them right, they said 35,000 toilets were being manufactured in China and would be delivered to Christchurch on Sunday. That's like 3 days or something. It just shows you what China can do. But what is interesting to me about that is that I had thought that having chemical toilets on hand would be a good idea in the event of a disaster and sewage is out. So you can do that without having to dig a hole in the backyard. But I bet they'd be hard to find right now, so I may have to put that part off. However, I have done stuff about updating our get-through kit. I topped up our water, so we now do have enough water for two people for 3 days. And I got a few other bits and pieces, some hand sanitizer, because we may not be able to wash our hands, and stuff like that. But the thing about tin food is that, first of all, we have to have a plan of what we're going to have. And we have to figure out a strategy, I suppose, for rotating through it. Now, tin food doesn't have expiry dates on it. It doesn't have pack dates either. So you've got no idea how old it is when you buy it. But the reason it doesn't have an expiry date is because it's considered long-life food, which can stay fresh for 2 years minimum. And realistically, it can stay fresh for maybe 5 years under relatively ideal conditions. But nevertheless, you don't want to leave it there for 5 years. And the smart thing to do is to rotate it through, but you have to have a strategy for doing that. And quite frankly, I haven't been able to figure that all out yet. Nevertheless, if there was an emergency, we certainly would have 3 days worth of tin food on hand, especially if you consider the fact that if power was out as well, we'd be spending the first day or two just eating everything that was in the freezer and the fridge. So when you consider that, then yeah, we probably do have more than enough. The plan ultimately is to have some sort of strategy for rotating through the tins that we've got. But we have enough water, which is the main thing, because you can live for, a month, I think, if on water alone before you'll succumb. But you'll only live a couple of days without water or food, something like that. I can't remember the exact numbers. Maybe somebody can remind me. But those are some updates on what's going on with the earthquake. Now, I have talked about people being able to leave messages for the people of Christchurch. I've gotten a couple, and I decided I'm going to extend the deadline out to noon Monday Eastern Standard Time, which is 6 a.m. Tuesday New Zealand Daylight Time. So you still have time to get to send me a message for the people of Christchurch if you so want. If you want to do that, and you can do that by sending ringing my voice line on 206-666-5172, or you can send me an audio boo at audioboo.fm/amarins. You can leave a message there, or you can record your own and tag it Amarins, AmerInz. Or you can send me an MP3 file. And because I've got more capacity on this address, I'm using Arthur, Arthur, A-R-T-H-U-R, at Amarins.com. Not AmarinsPodcast.com, just Amarins.com. And as I said, the deadline for that will be noon Monday Eastern Standard Time. Right, now I'm going to move on to some other things, starting with voice messages.
Hello again. 10,000 fucking dollars for architect granny flat. That's complete bullshit. I don't think there's that much of a difference as far as the workload and the actual CAD drawing that an architect could do in comparison from America to New Zealand. But I don't know, there might be a difference. But we're getting a whole farm dwelling, which technically is a cottage, pole building structure, 100,000 square feet, for up to $3,000. For just the architectural drawings and submittal. So I don't know if there's some heavy restrictions or taxes or what could be the possibility of why it's just a add-on / remodel. Can't be that much. He sounds like a shyster. Anyway. And then I heard later on in your episode about Tracy, which I love Tracy. I dislike Fausto, which is why I stopped listening to their show. I like Mark, I like Tracy, but Fausto always seemed to be a stick in the mud. Anyway, I would love to hear stories about Tracy and yourself. That would be fun. She's a fantastic lady. She's incredible. And she's got an incredible history. From what little I've heard on the episodes of Feast of Fun, she's an incredible person as well, so it'll be interesting to hear what kind of stories you have. Anyway, this seems to be a more together message. I love your podcast, Arthur. Keep it up. And I almost wish you'd put them out more often, but I like it this way, just the way it is. Take care. Bye.
Well, that was Kyle in Hawaii. Thank you very much, Kyle. And he didn't identify himself because the one... He actually left a message before that he asked me not to play, and I didn't, obviously, because I'm a good boy. I do as I'm told. But Kyle always leaves the best messages, and I think he's sometimes too self-conscious about them because they're always really good. But first, the last part first. Ironically enough, I was planning on doing more per week than just one. And this week I was going to do one earlier in the week, but for a variety of reasons, it ended up not happening. Obviously, but I am hoping to do more this coming week. Although I'm next week is my big work project, so we'll see. I don't know that it will be the Tuesday cast. That may be the one with messages. I don't know. We'll see. We'll just see how things go. But about the architect, Kyle, you're not the only one who wondered about the high price. I think it was Scotty the Little Aussie Battler sent me an email, and I think I might have gotten a couple of others, but I did some investigating about that, and apparently that's not altogether an unusual price. Maybe a bit high, maybe not, I don't know. But the thing is that architects are considered a critical skills shortage in New Zealand. We don't have enough. And in 2005, which were the most recent numbers I could find, only about half of the places in university for architecture students were actually filled. And the same year, only about that number of jobs, available open jobs were filled as well. Which means that not only are there not enough architects for the jobs, but there also aren't enough students coming along to fill those jobs, so the situation is going to get even worse over time. And it's capitalism at work, supply and demand. There aren't enough architects, so the price goes up. And I'm sure that that's what's behind it all. They're just, I think there's something like 1,400 licensed architects in the entire country, something like that. And especially now with all the rebuilding in Christchurch, it's going to be really hard to find architects to, especially to do small projects. So that's, I think that's what's behind it. But anyway, that whole thing has been shelved. And I'll come back to that in a little bit. About Tracy, there's actually aren't any stories to tell. Sad, but true. Not really, anyway. Tracy was actually my boyfriend back when she was a boy. And this is going back, I think it was 1990, 89, maybe? Somewhere, anyway, a long time ago. And we were flatmates afterwards as well for a time. But one of our flatmates for quite a while was a musical theater actor, Tracy was at the time. And so we hung around theater people all the time. And they're actually not as interesting as you would think. I'm kidding. I'm joking. But no, it was a fairly ordinary time in a lot of ways. The thing is that it was a difficult time for me for a lot of reasons. I was an activist at the time, and I was very frustrated by a lot of what was going on. And I ended up quitting activism in that time, basically because of the frustration. This had nothing to do with Tracy. This is just what was going on. However, I learned a lot about myself during that time, and Tracy played a big part in that in helping me, giving me the mental space, I suppose, in order to be able to sort some things out in my head, and one of which was that I didn't want to be an activist anymore. And I mean, I don't know that I helped Tracy at all during that period of time, but she certainly helped me. But that's really all the stories I've got. So, yeah. I know, not very interesting. Sorry. Oh, I should add that I received that call before the Christchurch earthquake, and it would have been on the episode that I did the Christchurch earthquake, but obviously that didn't happen, that episode. So anyway, now I'm going to move on to the next call.
Hi, Arthur. This is Roger. I'm glad you're blogging about the earthquake. I knew from your last blogging session about an earthquake in Christchurch that you weren't that close to it, but we still worry about you. So take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Roger. I've obviously become an advocate for social networks in an emergency, and I've been blogging about that kind of extensively. And I intend to keep doing that whenever anything comes up, because, like I've said before, when it's quite often that the only thing people hear about New Zealand overseas is when there's a disaster or tragedy or something, and I need to make sure that people know that we're okay. And rest assured that if anything happens that does affect us, I will also share that too, because that's what I do. Now on to the next comment.
Hey, Arthur. This is Scott, a.k.a. Sader69. I'm just calling to say hi, and that it's Podcaster Appreciation Week. So I'm calling the podcasters I appreciate and letting them know I appreciate you for podcasting. Now, I know this message sounds kind of flip in light of recent tragedies in New Zealand, but I like keeping a happy outlook. Y'all have gone through a lot, and I'm really feeling for your second country. I've never been to New Zealand. I wouldn't mind it. But right now, poor Christchurch, they've gone through a lot. But in the meantime, you are wonderful for all that you do for both countries. And I just want you to know that you are appreciated, and that I love your show, and you are an inspiration. And, yeah, that's about it, really. So you have a good day over there, and I look forward to your next show. All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you for that, Sader. And it actually turns out the Podcast Appreciation Week is true. It really exists. I think it's being promoted by somebody who promotes podcasts, but nevertheless, it still is a real thing. But thank you, Sader. And he does the Satersphere podcast, which is really good, really, really good. And it's sometimes not safe for work. And that's mostly when he talks about hockey. I'm joking. No, seriously, I enjoy it. I listen to it, and I urge you to as well. You can get to it at satersphere.blogspot.com, and satersphere is S-A-T-Y-R, sphere.blogspot.com. And now on to the next message.
Hello, Arthur. This is the Faye Driver from the Pink Wheel Nuts podcast. Arthur, how dare you affront the mighty BMW 700 series? I'm appalled. You obviously, sir, have never driven in a BMW 700 series. You've been driving around those Ford Fiestas or what have you, some other horrible thing, some Australian manufactured nickel bag. I'm telling you, a Lexus, you say. There's no comparison between BMW and Lexus. My goodness, man. In any case, I cannot support you, good sir, on your criticism of the millions of dollars spent for a fleet of BMWs. Someone should be so lucky, I think. Besides, you know, someone should reap the benefits of all the wealth of this world. I mean, we're just minions, Arthur. You should let some people have their little luxuries. Anyway, love your show, Arthur.
Well, thanks for that, Ange. And I actually have no problem with public officials having their little luxuries. I just don't want to pay for them. And actually, I don't know why, but for some reason he gave me an idea. And that is that what they could do is they could give people rides in these flash new limousines, maybe $5 a head or something, and then all the proceeds could go toward paying them off. And maybe Christchurch earthquake as well. But it would be one way to deal with, you know, all of the costs involved. It's just a thought anyway. But check out his podcast, The Faye Driver. And, I mean, I enjoy it, although it's sort of like when he starts talking about cars, or it's sort of when Apollonius does as well, I sort of tune out because it doesn't really mean anything to me. I'm actually one of those people where they say, what kind of car does so-and-so drive? I'd say, oh, it's a blue one, or oh, it's a red one. I don't know. I'm not a car person. I just put petrol in it and it goes. You know, that's all I know about. Oh, speaking of cars, though, remember I talked about my battery problems? Well, they've continued. And I've had to charge the battery a few times. We got one of those mobile jump starter things. It's got a battery in it. And I'm carrying that around with me now, just in case I'm out somewhere and the car won't start. And I know the battery's defective. I know I need to get a new one. But it's still under warranty. And until I can resolve it with the Automobile Association, because it's their battery, I don't want to buy a new one. So, but anyway, having a charger is always handy, and having a jump starter is handy as well, because, you know, you never know when you might need it. Now, I'll tell you what, I'm going to go on to written comments now, because when I do so, there's a few other updates that I'll probably get to. And back up first to 247. Which is the episode I would have been talking about last time, except, of course, I didn't do comments. And the first comment is from Roger Green, who said, number one, thanks for the shout-out. You're welcome, Roger. Number two, I love how the Illinois boy comes up with clear Kiwiism, such as a lot of cheek. And, you know, I'm usually not even aware I'm doing it. It's just so second nature to me now. And this came up on Twitter when somebody was thinking that capsicums were hot peppers when they're capsicum is like what Americans would call green pepper, except that they're not necessarily green. But, and I use these phrases or words or what have you, and I don't even think about it anymore. Three, as you know, the U.S. would never have developed as much as it has in the deep south and southwest without air conditioning, which is just over 100 years old. Yes, that's true. And sometimes I'm amazed that Auckland has gotten as far along as it has with air conditioning so relatively recent. Four, I'm utterly fascinated by your avoidance of that gay celebration thing because of the way you look. I've been told you are very beautiful. Thank you, Roger. I don't know who's telling you that, but they're lying. It's got to do with body image. Just very simple body image. Nothing unusual, nothing unique in any manner, shape, or form. I've always been insecure about my body because I've always thought I was fat, probably because at one stage I was. And when I was a teenager, late teenager, like 18, 19, 17, 18, 19, 20, somewhere in there. I was actually too skinny probably because you could see my ribs, but I thought I was fat. And I mean, don't worry. I wasn't doing anything weird like binging and purging or anything like that. I did sometimes starve myself unintentionally. I mean, I wasn't setting out to, I must eat or anything, but that's the way it worked out. And in the years since then, as I've gotten older and have put on weight again, I'm more self-conscious than ever, probably. And I just, especially in a place like that, which has a lot of people who are beautiful and guys walking around with their shirts off, and they should, and probably some who shouldn't, but that's another issue. I just feel out of place and uncomfortable. And that's really all it is. And if I was 10 pounds lighter or so, actually probably more like 10 kilos lighter, I'd feel much better and I'd feel much more comfortable in my own skin. But that's all it is. It's very simple, very matter-of-fact, very run-of-the-mill. And next up was Angela, who said, "Oh, wow, I've been listening to Feast of Fun for about as long as I've been listening to your show, and I love Tracy's wild stories. So you two know each other? Well, then, I'll let you talk about it in your own time, as you say." Thank you, Angela. And Het M, in a similar vein, said, "Yes, I remember the story. You told it some time ago." And actually, Het M, I didn't. I think you may be thinking of Feast of Fun, because I believe Tracy did talk about it, at least in part, in an episode at some stage or other. I remember the first time that she mentioned me was right after I got back to New Zealand from my trip there in late 2007, early 2008. But I'm pretty sure it came up again later on. Although I could be wrong. Maybe I'm completely wrong. But certainly haven't talked about it in any detail before. No particular reason. It's just that as anyone probably has realized by now, I generally don't talk about people who aren't, who haven't given me, I don't know how to put it exactly, who haven't given me permission maybe, or who haven't, I don't know, who aren't part of the podcast normally. I'm not really sure. But yeah, so there's no particular reason. I just haven't. And next, we're going on to episode 248, and Roger Green was the first commentator again. And he says, "I'm not a big believer in apocalyptic literature, but the earth is shaking and baking a lot, it seems. The Christchurch story is sad, of course, and you did a lovely job on the podcast. But I keep wondering what the next disaster will be. Or maybe I'm just that I have death on my mind lately. Thank you, Roger, and you have every reason to have death on your mind. I don't believe in end times or apocalyptic stuff at all, so I'm probably not the best person to comment on that. And there is a lot of stuff that goes on, and sometimes earthquakes come in waves, particularly because one big earthquake can set something loose somewhere else on the same fault or a related fault. That's not uncommon. A lot of the weather events we see certainly are related to climate change, which, contrary to Republican and Tea Party belief, does exist, or ACT Party here in New Zealand. They don't believe in it either. Because they're, don't get me started on them. Although I will come back to them. This is an election year. Related to the earthquake and the national state of emergency, this year's census has been canceled, which I think Roger will be interested in. It, by law, has to be held every 5 years, and they can postpone it until later in the year. It was supposed to be tomorrow, I think, was Census Day. Or maybe it's today. Anyway, it's been canceled. And my understanding is that's actually illegal. They can't cancel it. They have to pass a new law to enable it to be held some other time. Whether that does happen or not, I don't know. And I don't know what they're going to do, quite frankly. I mean, they could easily postpone it to later in the year. I don't know. But part of it is that they have to count every single person who's in New Zealand on census night, visitor, resident, citizen, whatever. And the problem with Christchurch is that apparently a few thousand have left the city because of the earthquake for whatever reason. And they want to give them time to get back before they're counted because they don't want to undercount Christchurch because that affects the drawing of the electoral boundaries, among other things. And the last comment was from Tim Carmel, who said, "Hey, Arthur, thanks for the update about the earthquake in Christchurch. We aren't getting much news about it over here in the U.S., and your show really filled me in on what's going on. In listening to the John Key speech you included at the end of the show, he used several acronyms I'm not familiar with, such as EQC. It sounded like some kind of government-provided insurance program. I can only imagine the Tea Party's response to something like that in America, unless it was an insurance program for Wall Street." Thank you, Tim. And yes, EQC is an insurance scheme. It stands for Earthquake Commission, and it actually covers all natural disasters, including floods and landslips and things like that. And the way it works is that you pay a levy, or tax, basically, on your insurance policy. And that goes into the kitty, and it's invested, and then they pay out in the event of an earthquake. They pay for homeowner, they pay the first $100,000, I think it is, or $200,000, I've forgotten, of the damage, and then your private insurance kicks in over that. So if your house is a total loss because of a disaster, they start the ball rolling, and then your insurance company pays the rest. If it just has to be repaired, then I believe that they and it's less than $200,000 or $100,000 or whatever it is, I think they cover it. Now, they will also pay for the land, but land is very seldom destroyed. It sometimes work has to be done to make it usable again, but it's not actually destroyed. And but if it is, they have a separate payout for that. That's my understanding anyway. Now, businesses have a different scheme. Earthquake Commission does not cover business premises. It only covers the land, which, as I said, is very seldom destroyed or rendered unusable, unless there's like a landslip or something, half a cliff falls off. And you have to have private insurance for your business. But that's a whole other issue. So that's what EQC is, and it's a fair and equitable system. Everybody pays through it seamlessly as they pay their insurance premiums. And the only catch is if you don't have homeowner's insurance for the dwelling itself, then you also don't have EQC coverage. And that could be a problem for some people, especially if they're poor people or just negligent. I mean, I'm sorry, but I mean, everybody knows this is or should know that this is the case. And they really do have to have even basic insurance on their premises so that they're covered. Now, tenants aren't covered for that. They sometimes can be covered for their contents, particularly if they have contents insurance. That may be the only way. I don't know because I haven't been a tenant in New Zealand, so I don't know how that works. But yeah, that's what it is. Now, related to houses, this has nothing to do with comments anymore. This is back to me, all about me. We looked at a house last weekend that we really quite liked, and all other things being equal, we would have put an offer in on it. It was one that was in a better area, bigger house, night, really lovely land, gardens and stuff, but it needed a bit of work, needed to be tarted up. I mean, structurally sound, it didn't need structural work, it just needed redecorating, basically, similar to what we did in Pairoa, and was certainly up to that task, no problem. The problem, however, was that it was going to auction next week, I think, and somebody made a pre-auction offer on Monday, and all the other people who had registered an interest, including us, had until 10 a.m. the following day, Tuesday, to put in an offer. And in a situation like that, it has to be an unconditional offer, which means basically, I've got my money lined up, I don't want anything, I'm just giving you this money to buy the house. We couldn't do that. We weren't in a position to do that. We haven't been to the bank yet, so we don't have pre-approved finance. Our house isn't on the market or anything else, so we couldn't do it. And as it happens, I think the people who bought it paid too much because it does need quite a bit of redecorating work and updating. And when they're done, they're going to be at the upper end of the value of houses in that street, that area, and probably above what they could get if they wanted to turn around and sell it. So I think they paid too much, even in a low market. Which is another reason we wanted to do it, because the market is depressed and we thought this is a good time to buy. But we're meeting next week with a financial advisor to help us kind of rearrange everything and sort everything out to figure out how this is going to happen. But as I said before, we're not really sure what we're going to do next, and this is just our way of preparing to do that, to get things sorted. But that is it for today and for this week. Remember, you can send a message by noon on Monday, Eastern Standard Time. And for more information on all that, you can go to my portal site, as I call it, which is amerinz.com, amerinz.com, and click on Canterbury Earthquake. And it has some links for donations and also goes over the instructions on how to submit your message to Christchurch to me. But that's it for today. Have a great weekend, everybody. Bye. You can leave a comment on this or any other episode of the Amerinz Podcast at amerinzpodcast.com. You can send an email to me at Arthur, that's A-R-T-H-U-R, at amerinzpodcast.com, or you can ring my U.S. comment line on 206-666-5172. This podcast is produced and distributed under Creative Commons license. Complete details at the website.